You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
This was a takeover. This was a takedown of a duly elected president of the United States. When I fired Comey because he was dishonest and he lied in front of Congress and other things, when I fired Comey, you know what hit the fan, and it was big. It was big. It was a monster. And those guys, when McCabe, who's a bad guy, all of these guys started going after each other. I love the FBI. These are great. If you did a poll there, I'd do very well in the FBI. But the top was crooked. They were dirty cops.
May the 8th, 2020. President Trump and his words in an interview this morning on Fox News, talking about the DOJ dropping the case against Michael Flynn. And I will repeat what he said to an extent when he said, when I fired Comey, it all hit the fan. And it did. They did not cease their efforts, though. They continued to go after anyone and everyone they could. It was clearly an effort to overthrow a duly elected president. The DOJ dropped the case against Michael Flynn, stating, looking at the FBI interview of Flynn, it was untethered to and unjustified by the FBI's counterintelligence investigation into Mr. Flynn. The interview was conducted, quote, without any legitimate investigative basis. In other words, they were trying to set a perjury trap, like we've said all along. And the FBI agents had went over with the direction of James Comey at that time, going to the White House, not talking to White House counsel as per protocol, but just calling up Flynn and say, hey, we'd like to come over and talk a little bit. And all they were doing is trying to set a perjury trap. Former Congressman Trey Gowdy, who had served as the House Oversight Committee chair through all of this, his reactions about Jim Comey claiming that the DOJ now has lost its way. That's what the former FBI director says. Comey says the DOJ has lost its way. Here's Trey Gowdy's reaction.
Jim Comey, I got the title for his next book, How My Arrogance Ruined the Reputation of the World's Premier Law Enforcement Agency. That's your next title. It's long, but the book is long. But that's the next book he ought to write. Not one about honor and integrity, how his own arrogance and hubris wrecked the FBI.
He's absolutely right. We will have more, a lot more, on the Flynn investigation and response from A.G. Barr on, again, on laying a perjury trap for Flynn. Guest coming up, Zach Smith, Heritage legal expert, looking at the DOJ's decision to drop this case. And, of course, we cannot ignore, obviously, the latest American Jobs Report for April, record 20.5 million American jobs lost last month. Our unemployment rate right now at 14.7%. 14.7%. During the Great Recession, it hit 25%, 1933. Obviously not looking good. Also be joined by John LeBoutier out of New York for the East Coast Report on coronavirus and the battle, and James Herson from the West Coast on the same story, and each of them adding their remarks about the Flynn investigation and DOJ case. Our loyal listener Andrew in Chicago called my attention to this while I was working on so many other things. I'd heard some word about it, hadn't had a chance to dig it out. He sent it to me. It's a direct out of the Tribune in San Luis Obispo, exclusive 1996 court document confirms Tara Reid told of harassment in Biden's office in 96. This comes from a deposition by her then-husband at that time, Theodore Dronin. At the time, he was contesting a restraining order she had filed against him days after he filed for divorce. And in his report, his deposition, he makes this statement talking about Tara Reid. On several occasions, she related a problem she was having at work regarding sexual harassment in U.S. Senator Joe Biden's office. She told me that eventually she struck a deal with the chief of staff of the senator's office and left her position. She said it was obvious this event had a very traumatic effect on her and that she's still sensitive and affected by it today. The event happening in 93, his testimony in 96. Smoking gun? Harassment in Biden's office? Doesn't name Biden directly, but I would say, yeah, it's a smoking gun. Worth more investigation. Friends, we got a lot lined up for you over the next 2 hours. Do not miss it. Let your family and friends know we're on the air. You do not want to miss this program, because we're going to cover everything I possibly can cram into 2 hours. And believe me, there's going to be a lot of jamming. Make sure you're with us. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
COVID-19 is a new health concern, but Wellington Environmental has 30 years experience to make your company and environment safe. Wellington Environmental can give you peace of mind, and the cost is very reasonable. These days, you can't take a chance that customers, employees, your family would be exposed to COVID-19. You have to be proactive. That starts by calling Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. You'll quickly see why customers have relied on Wellington Environmental for decades. COVID-19 can survive for hours on your furniture, your computers, your equipment, and every time someone touches that surface, they could be exposed. You don't want that liability. Call Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest, best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
I am flesh and I am bone, rise up, ting, ting, like glitter and gold. I got fire in my soul, rise up, ting, ting, like glitter. Like glitter and gold. Like glitter. Do you walk in the Valley of Kings?
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I think that a very important evidence here was that this was not a bona fide counterintelligence investigation. Was that they were closing the investigation in December. They started that process, mm-hmm. and on January 4th, they were closing it. They kept it open for the express purpose of trying to catch, lay a perjury trap for General Flynn.
Attorney General William Barr saying the FBI was laying a perjury trap for General Flynn. Now, of course, Flynn ended up pleading guilty on some perjury charges and, of course, said I was doing it because they were forcing me. They were going to send my son to jail, and he'd done nothing. And Barr addressing that, saying, well, you know, sometimes people plead to things that turn out not to be crimes, and the Department of Justice is not persuaded this was material to any legitimate counterintelligence investigation, so it was not a crime. Joining us now, Zach Smith, author with the Daily Signal and the Heritage Foundation. Zach, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Larry, for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet. Well, what was your response when you first heard the DOJ says, kick the case out, it's done, there's nothing here?
It's an overdue move, Larry. From what we know now, it looks like these charges should never have been brought against Michael Flynn. And it's essentially what Attorney General William Barr said. You know, my colleagues and I have a piece that we published this morning in the National Interest, kind of laying out our views on the prosecution. And all three of us have worked in the Department of Justice in various capacities. And I served for several years as an assistant U.S. attorney in Florida. And I can tell you, kind of digging into this and looking at the procedural process that was followed in this prosecution, to put it charitably, it was odd.
Odd is a charitable word. I would say absolute scandal, yeah. And scam. And clearly Barr said they were trying to lay a perjury trap. I mean, that's not the intent of justice, to trap someone that, like that way.
That's absolutely right, Larry. And, you know, if you go back and you look at some of the statements that former FBI Director James Comey has made, you know, he's admitted and was pretty proud of himself, frankly, that he didn't follow the standard process for interviewing folks in high-level positions in the White House, that he just sent a couple of agents over and hoped he would get away with it. And what's really important to realize here is what we know now is that several weeks before the FBI ever went and interviewed General Flynn, they had already decided that he didn't have any information relevant to the investigation they were conducting on Russian interference in the presidential election in 2016. And so because they had already decided to close that file, the fact that they then went and still interviewed him, you know, it certainly does look like they were trying to catch him in a lie if they could.
So
and that is not the purpose of the FBI.
So, yeah, so we've got about 56 more depositions, possibly 53 depositions to be released, and they include remarks from former Director Andrew McCabe, also former Director of National Intelligence Clapper, U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. at the time, Samantha Power, Obama National Security Advisor Susan Rice. Let me point out something and get you a quick response as we go through each of those names. McCabe admitted the FBI was unable to prove the accuracy of that Steele dossier, which was used for the surveillance warrants. He admitted they were unable to prove the accuracy, and so they were going forward on that. But, of course, at that time, they were still doing it. But in a deposition testimony finally released, he said, yeah, we didn't have any belief in that was being accurate. Your response?
Well, I think this highlights part of the larger process with this entire investigation, Larry. You know, several weeks ago, we started hearing about, in more detail, the FISA abuses that were taking place. And so from the outset, the very basis of the investigation is troubling and extremely problematic. But I want to highlight something. You know, one of the reasons the fact that the FBI had already decided to close the investigation on Flynn is so important is that in order to be guilty of the crime that General Flynn pled to, his statements had to be material to some investigation. And that materiality element is important because if the statements weren't material, there can't be a crime. And that keeps the FBI from, you know, using any statement against anyone as a potential basis for prosecution.
That's a statement that Barr made, that sometimes people plead guilty to something that turns out to be a crime.
Right. And as prosecutors, that's one of the reasons, you know, prosecutors have to be extremely careful in that they have the accurate factual basis established even when somebody pleads guilty, because you don't want somebody to plead guilty to a crime that they did not commit. And, you know, I think one of the other troubling things that we've learned in these documents, which, by the way, have only been released because Attorney General Bill Barr appointed an independent U.S. Attorney's Office to review this entire investigation, is the way the prosecutors structured some of the disclosures that they made to General Flynn and some of the disclosures that they didn't make. You know, as part of any deal prosecutors cut with somebody, they have to release that information against future defendants that individual may testify against. And it's clear here that prosecutors were clearly trying to avoid having to make those future disclosures. And so based on what we know, it's hard to say whether there was a technical violation of those disclosure rules, but it seems clear there was certainly a violation of the intent and spirit of those rules at a minimum.
You're listening to Zach Smith, author of the Daily Signal and the Heritage Foundation. Now, of course, you point out accurately that an independent counsel had been appointed by Barr. He was the one that said these need to be released. But, of course, if you listen to Adam Schiff, we decided to release them because we know it proves our case that all of these transcripts prove our case, and the narrative from the White House and the right is that they're rewriting history, rewriting the transcripts. I don't see that.
Well, that's right, Larry. And if you go back, when former Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, who was the Deputy Attorney General under the Obama administration, initially testified before Congress, she said that the reason FBI agents went and interviewed General Flynn was for a potential violation of the Logan Act. Now, the Logan Act is a 200-year-old law that only two people in history have ever been prosecuted under, the last one in 1852. And it's unclear that this law is even constitutional. And so the idea that FBI agents were interviewing the incoming national security advisor for a potential violation of this very old law, very rarely used law, is absurd on its face. And should be one of the first flags that we have that something was amiss here.
You know, you mentioned Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates at that time. She was asked to stay behind in a briefing in the Oval Office by Obama, where she had been in a meeting with FBI Director Comey, Vice President Biden, CIA Director Brennan, and Director of National Intelligence Clapper. And Yates was surprised to hear Obama knew details of the investigation of Michael Flynn. So they knew all the way in the White House. Obama knew this investigation was underway and what it was finding or not finding.
Right. And what we know now is that after the FBI was prepared to close their file on General Flynn, from the documents that have recently been released, it looks like high-level FBI officials, former Director Comey, former Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, intervened and kept the investigation open. And if you look at some of these recently released notes, a high-level FBI official who was in some of those meetings wrote in his notes, which is very unusual. You know, what's our purpose here? Is our purpose here to get to the truth or to set him up to potentially lie and be able to prosecute him or get him removed from office?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Larry.
Well, obviously, that raises a big flag. And I think one of those FBI agents was Priestap. That was his handwritten notes asking, what are we trying to do? Get him fired? Or are we supposed to catch him in a lie? And they were going to close what they called Operation Razor, the investigation into Flynn. And when Agent Peter Smurf, as I call him, Peter Stroke, heard about it, he immediately shouted out, don't close it. Seventh floor is involved. And as you said, that refers to McCabe, Comey, and now, I think, into the White House.
Well, and one of the things that my colleagues and I didn't address in our article, but I think is worth noting here, after FBI agents do an interview with anyone, they typically fill out something called a 302, a report of investigation. And what we saw in these recently released documents is that this report of investigation was being edited by several people who weren't involved in the interview of General Flynn. And that's a departure from how things are usually done and is troubling, especially if the basis for the prosecution is what General Flynn said in that interview, and the document that reflects that is being edited by individuals who weren't even present at the interview. And so that was troubling from the outset.
Yeah, and those being quoted in more papers yet to be released, of course, as I said, including depositions involving Clapper and Susan Rice. And again, in the midst of this, they're getting the testimony, they knew it, and you still had Adam Schiff going forward, telling the American people, telling Congress, we don't just have a suspicion, and it's more than just a thought. We have evidence. We have conclusive evidence that there was collusion. First of all, collusion not being a crime, but he's indicating our testimony we've gotten says we've got it. Well, the transcripts now being released say, according to Clapper, Director of National Intelligence at the time, I don't recall any instance where I had direct evidence. I never saw any direct empirical evidence. The National Security Advisor, Susan Rice, asked the same question. To the best of my recollection, there wasn't anything smoking. They're all saying there was no empirical evidence of any Trump-Russia collusion.
Right, and I think this goes back to another troubling aspect of the Flynn investigation. You know, at the outset, General Flynn had retained a very prominent Washington, D.C. law firm to represent him. And what we're hearing now is that several times General Flynn was offered congressional immunity if he would come into Congress and testify about what he knew in exchange for being granted immunity. The allegations that are being made now is that offer was never conveyed to General Flynn. And if that turns out to be true, that is a shocking failure on the part of his attorneys by failing to convey that offer to their client.
I think that and same so, attorney with the current attorney has acknowledged the previous attorney still didn't turn over every piece of information that would help Flynn when they asked for all of the information from the case.
Well, that's exactly right. And in fact, we saw this past week, past several weeks, a dump of 6,800 new documents that they did not previously disclose. And the troubling thing is, you know, one of the bases that DOJ threatened to prosecute General Flynn under was a violation of a Foreign Registration Act. You know, he was representing some foreign entities. DOJ said he didn't register properly. In taking steps to register, General Flynn relied on the advice of the previous attorneys who were representing him in the criminal matter. And so one of the questions that a lot of people are asking now, and his current lawyers raised, is was there a conflict of interest? And again, if the allegations that are being made are true, it would certainly seem likely that okay. There very likely could be a conflict of interest there.
In the last 30 seconds, I want to again just get your reaction when word is surfacing now that Obama knew about this investigation. He's being kept informed of it.
Sure. You know, there's nothing per se wrong with a president being informed of the investigation, but the problem with this particular investigation is it appears that it was politically motivated.
All right.
especially when you look at the fact that Director Comey bragged about not following standard procedure.
All right, Jack, I've got to end it there. I'm against a hard break, but I wanted to get that reaction from you, and I do appreciate it very much.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Larry.
You bet. Jack Smith, Daily Signal, coming up. Closer look at the economy being wrecked.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com.
Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place, singing,
we will rock you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Over the past 7 weeks, more than 33 million Americans have filed claims for unemployment. And we just had the April figures coming in, the unemployment rate jumping to 14.7%. April, the second consecutive month of job losses for the U.S. economy. That follows 113 months as we expanded the employment rolls. Trump was on track, had everything going forward, pushing great economy, going great for everyone, until the virus came to our shores. Employment falling sharply in all major industry sectors, especially the heavy job losses in leisure and hospitality. Manufacturing shedding jobs, about 1.3 million. Almost 400,000 in the auto sector. Construction, almost 1 million. White-collar jobs not been protected. Those with financial services, information technology, about 2 million jobs lost there. And, of course, the Trump administration had pushed Congress to authorize direct payments to U.S. households to help support incomes and raise the amount paid by unemployment benefits. And that was a help, but that was the first one out of the gate. Then we had to come up with another one, the payroll pension plan. And, of course, we've been going through that. And each time it was stalled, every time it was stalled on getting the money out the door by the Democrats, in particular Nancy Pelosi. She wanted America to continue to suffer. The more they can have you suffering and have this job market messed up like this going into November, the greater they think it's going to be for them. I want to point out to you again, we were at 14.7% unemployment during the Depression. In 1933, we were 25%. We're not that far from that number. But as we begin to reopen our economy, we would expect to see it turn around. It will not turn around as fast as it went to hell in the basket, but we will at least be making some moves. And, of course, there's still efforts to find more money to help the workers. Not big corporations, help the workers. We got to help some of the corporations, some of the bigger businesses, because they actually employ the others. You just got to make sure the money is spent correctly. And, of course, the Democrats are not going to waste this opportunity. They do believe, as it's been stated by Ron Emanuel when he was with Obama, never let a crisis go to waste. And so now we have House Speaker Nancy Pelosi cracking the whip on Democrat House members. She wants them to get ready for another relief measure. And she said, think big. Think big. In other words, they're looking at all the things they could not get in previously. That would be emission standards for airlines getting the funds, expansion of wind and solar tax credits, requirement for federal and corporate gender and racial diversity bailout for the post office, restrictions on colleges for providing information about citizenship status. Yeah, that's right. There were only illegals notified, or ICE had notified illegals in the college. Vote by mail, ballot. What does all that have to do with getting America back to work? The answer, you know. Not a thing, not a single thing. In all of these cases, what we have is the left rushing forward. They think they see a vacuum. They think we're going to fill it with everything we want from our dream pie, and we're going to put it in play. Politico is reporting Democrats hope to draft their legislation this time ahead of the Senate in order to set a baseline. Last time, the House wouldn't come together, but Nancy wouldn't bring them together. So the Republicans in the Senate took control, and they came up with that first plan, but then Nancy delayed 3 weeks even bothering with it. And then she delayed again. Now, in the call, Pelosi apparently, talking to some of her colleagues, stressed the ethics of the next relief package. They want an ethical approach to saving lives, to how this money is distributed. In other words, get all of the things we couldn't get before to move towards socialism. John LaBoutière, former U.S. Congressman from New York, coming up. Stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure you have some alarms to let you know if someone breaks into your home. But what happens if your home is invaded by creatures? Six legs, eight legs, maybe more. Rottler Pest Solutions can help keep those pests out of your house. And if they're already inside, get them out. In fact, you can get a free, no-obligation inspection and estimate to protect your home. You can get that at any time. Go online to Rottler.com. Rottler.com, schedule your free inspection today. Rottler is the largest family-owned pest control business in Missouri. 10 locations, more than 200 team members. Plus, Rottler has a money-back guarantee. If you're not happy for any reason, they will make it right or your money back. You know, I first called Rottler more than 40 years ago, so I know they will take good care of you. I continue to trust Rottler. Rottler Pest Solutions, Rottler.com, Rottler.com.
Well, I started out with one lone dollar, gambled with a man and I won me another. Bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. Gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Today we're getting reports from the East Coast to the West Coast on the coronavirus effect and other issues, and from the West Coast in the second hour. And James Hurston will be joining us, international attorney, and basically he does a lot of material on out of the West Coast, so we'll have that report from him. And now joining us, always glad to have on board, former U.S. Congressman John LaBoutière, a Reagan Republican, and living just about 20 miles from the epicenter of coronavirus in New York City. John, welcome aboard.
Hello, Larry. Yes, I'm right in the middle of it. I mean, I'm in, as you said, on Long Island, but we've got it out here, too.
And oh, yeah? Are you staying safe? Are you getting out any? Are you wearing a mask? What are you doing?
I'm out now. I'm in my car in a parking lot safely with the windows shut. If I get out, I have a mask on, as everybody I see has a mask on. I don't see anybody flaunting this thing, so I'm happy about that.
Do you think you guys are getting closer in New York City, New York State in general, to putting it behind you and going over the hump? I mean, the numbers keep – I haven't checked the latest numbers today. Maybe you have.
Well, we had 219, I think it was, died. So, that's better than 1,000 from 3 weeks ago, 1,000 a day. Yeah, but I think we're going in the right direction. Maybe June 1st is a target date to start relaxing some restrictions, I'm guessing.
Can I stop you there? I've got a lot of ground to cover with you, but you're saying they're looking at June 1st now. That's another. You think New York City, the state of New York, can put up with another 30 days locked down with current restrictions?
I think that there's no question about it. And I'll give you a good example. This isn't in every city, but New York City cannot function, if it were up and running, without the subway system working. And as of now, the subway system would be an incubator for this virus. If you've seen, you've maybe been here and been on the subway.
Right, right. Sure, but I thought everybody riding now was either wearing a mask and that they're cleaning them more often. I don't know that that's going to be good. Well, but
yeah, they are cleaning them at night now for the first time. But, you know, the ridership at the moment on the subway is down 92%. In other words, there's nobody on the subways. If we start to reopen and we have people packed in there like a meatpacking plant, and look what's happening in all of them.
Right.
I think there's great worry, even with masks, that it's just too many people too close to each other, holding on to the same poles and straps and escalator handles and all this and that, and that it would start up and flare up again. And
so
I know that they're looking at what to do about that.
So the balance of reopening New York or the country as a whole, and either expanding, and some are saying, look, let's just concentrate on hot areas and those who are vulnerable, like in nursing homes and so forth, deal with that, but start letting everything else open up. And this unemployment rate coming out today at 14.7%, when the Great Depression had 25%. I mean, we are not that far from those numbers.
No, I mean, it's obviously all bad economically, and it is a juggling act. What to do to balance public health and reopening the economy. And I think the answer is you reopen it step by step and ramp up, which we still haven't done, but we're trying to as a country, more tests, because the tests are the key to the thing. If you know that the person in the cubicle at work next to you has been tested and doesn't have it, and you don't have it because you've been tested, then you're a little less worried about it, right? And ultimately, that's the only way, short of a vaccine, we can get through this thing, is to have everybody tested and the sick people stay home. People with antibodies got to know it, so they're a little more immune. And the rest of us, which is the majority who have not had it and don't have it, we wear the mask and gloves, and we got to be very careful until a vaccine comes along.
From what I've seen, and maybe you have seen something different, testing is available. I mean, it's capable, but they're rapidly accelerating and doing more, but it takes a while. But, John, I'm looking at the economy crashing like this. I mean, at some point, and even after we have everybody tested, we're still going to have it. We have vaccines every year for influenza, and we still have influenza. We'll never get past this again.
Well, yeah, we do have influenza, and we have people die from influenza. And as long as this thing's floating around after a vaccine, a small percentage will die from it. But it'll be way less than what we're currently going through.
Well, we've had influenza take up to 70,000 lives a couple of years. And 50,000 to 60,000.
Some years it has.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is the vaccine changes every year because the flu changes every year.
So
we're vaccinated for last year's flu, not for the flu that's here now, because we don't know what it is until it's here.
All right, let me change gears with you. Obviously, I want your reaction to the DOJ dropping the charges against Michael Flynn.
Well, they have the right to do it. And I don't think the case is quite over yet. I think the federal judge on this case, Emmett Sullivan, was extremely agitated 2 years ago when it was recommended by the Mueller team no jail sentence for Flynn because he had cooperated. And the judge didn't go along with it, delayed sentencing, has delayed it repeatedly over a two-year period. I think he is going to not be happy with this move because
what, are you talking about Flynn? Are you talking about the judge? Okay.
I'm saying the judge is not going to be happy with this move by the Justice Department, because twice in Judge Sullivan's courtroom, under oath, Mike Flynn has pled guilty.
Yes, yes, he did. But the point A.G. Barr made today, sometimes they plead guilty to the crime that doesn't exist, and the point being that they were shutting it down. The FBI agents had said, we can shut it down, there's nothing here, and then agents...
That does not explain why he also lied to Mike Pence and why President Trump... Hold on, let me finish. Let me answer the question.
Answer the question.
It doesn't explain why the president then fired Mike Flynn for lying to the vice president and the FBI if he didn't lie. And by the way, if he didn't do anything wrong, why is he lying about it?
He said that he was being coerced and they were threatening to put his son in jail, so forth. And Pence has since said, you know, now I see all the facts. He didn't really lie to me like I thought he did. That aside, the transcripts have been released now. They are quoting repeatedly from McCabe saying, unable to prove any accuracy of that Steele dossier. You've got former intelligence director James Clapper.
This has nothing to do with the dossier.
Aside from that, James Clapper said never any direct empirical evidence the Trump campaign was plotting anything. So, in other words, there never was, quote, a crime.
The crime is lying to the FBI. That's the crime. No one said that Mike Flynn broke the law in any other way than lying to the FBI. And he pled guilty to it twice.
He did.
And he cooperated with the Mueller team, who said, yeah, he cooperated so enthusiastically, we recommend no jail time. And the federal judge said, I'm not sure about that.
But
and
the,
so
John,
this thing predator. Is going to the judge. It has to be dismissed by the judge. The prosecutors will ask him to dismiss it. He doesn't have to. And he may very well call a hearing and bring people in to find out what the hell went on here.
If he looks at the transcripts that are yet to be coming out that we're reporting, I mean that their word is that Clapper, former U.N. Ambassador Samantha Power, former National Security Advisor Rice, all saying there was nothing here. There was nothing showing any Trump-Russian collusion, which was the perfect or the reason they went to talk to Flynn to begin with. And I'm getting short on time, so I'll yield the floor.
Okay, that's not why they went to talk to Flynn. They went to talk to Flynn because he had a telephone call with the Russian ambassador Kislyak on the 30th of December.
That's tied to the Russian collusion. That's what they're trying to do.
That's why they went. They had him on tape. They listened to the call, and they went and asked him about it, and he lied about it. Now, why did he lie? He wasn't coerced to lie. He lied.
Why did the FBI break protocol and not notify White House counsel they're coming over with an investigative question?
I don't know, but the attorney general came rushing over to the White House counsel afterwards and said, you've got a big problem here. You've got this guy lying to FBI agents.
We'll see. I still think it's going to go the other way. But now, also in the midst of this, word has come out that Obama was aware of this inquiry underway. And, in fact, Attorney General Yates was totally surprised that he was involved to any extent that he was getting reports on it.
Well, she wasn't the attorney general when he was president.
Deputy attorney general at that time.
Yeah. And I don't know what he knew, and I don't know what these reports are. He wasn't the president when they came to see Mike Flynn.
No, but he was getting reports before, I think as late as January, before the inauguration.
Why shouldn't he? He's the president.
If
the FBI is investigating the Russians interfering in the campaign, and Obama put sanctions that day on the 30th of December on Russia for interfering in the election. And he put the sanctions on. He threw like two dozen diplomats out. He threw them out of a house right here where I am on Long Island, diplomatic compound they had. And that's what Flynn called up Kislyak at that point to get him not to retaliate with Russian sanctions on America.
Okay.
So I think that's all very legitimate to be investigated. Why are you talking to the Russians? You're not in power yet. And you're talking to them. What's that all about?
I could accept it. You know, it's just an advance trying to smooth the waters. But we're out of time. And, John, as always, I know the audience appreciates your insight. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry.
You bet.
Talk to you soon.
Stay healthy, sir.
Okay, same.
You bet.
Bye.
John Labutier from New York, and as in the second hour, James Herson will join us from the West Coast. The salon operator in Dallas is out of jail. Details coming up.
USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Well, now you have John Labutier's opinion and, of course, his report on coronavirus from the East Coast. In the next hour, and James Herson will be reporting from the West Coast on the coronavirus in the L.A. Hollywood area and his views also on the Flynn investigation. Now, I will tell you, it's going to be 180 degrees. Well, maybe not that far from Labutier, because John's not totally off the charts on his thought, but it's his opinion. I think he's giving him a little bit more grace than I would. But aside from that, I did not have time to get into the latest on Tara Reid's allegations against Joe Biden, of course, claiming that he had sexually assaulted her. In case you missed it in the opening monologue earlier today, there is a 1996 court document that confirms she did talk of harassment in Biden's office. 1996. Now, she and her then-husband at the time were going through a divorce, and he was testifying in a deposition because she had filed a restraining order against him. And she did apparently tell him at some point that she was sexually harassed by Joe Biden in 93. And he reported that in his deposition. Key point, harassed by somebody in the Biden office. Does not say Biden in particular, and does not say abused. Harassed is one thing. What she's claimed as a sexual assault, Biden putting his hands down inside her pants and inserting his finger in her, that's an entirely different look, but that's the way he reported in his deposition. So the question is that a smoking gun and will lead to something else? Out of Dallas, of course, we have an update on the salon operator. I knew it would. I told you yesterday that before the end of the day, she would be released. She was. And it happened after the Supreme Court of Texas got involved, ordering the judge, release the woman. We'd already had Lieutenant Governor of Texas say she shouldn't be in there and said, I'll take her place. Then we had the Attorney General of Texas say, you've got to let her go. The Governor of Texas said, I'm rescinding my order that puts any jail time to anyone violating the ordinance of opening early. And still, it took the Supreme Court to tell the judge, release the woman. And they did. And when she was released, she had supporters outside shouting, she's free, and she tried to choke back tears and talk to them and say, thank you so much. I'm a little overwhelmed. She said, I want to thank you for all you've done. And again, she was jailed because she opened her hair salon 7 days before the state said it could open. She said, I had to feed my family. The judge said, you need to stand here and apologize to me for violating this order. And if I don't get an apology from you and you saying that you were wrong and that you were obviously looking out for your own self-interest, you're going to jail. She said, I'm not going to say I was looking out for my own interest. I was looking out for my kids and the kids of my salon operators. They're trying to feed their kids. And the judge is a Democrat. He apparently has always been on the side of the underdog and so forth, but not this time, because he knows this is another way to damage Donald Trump and put the woman in jail. He didn't have to do that. He had all kinds of options, all kinds of options. He could have just fined her. He could have put her in for one day or for a period of hours. And basically, it was a contempt of court decision. Not the violation of the rule, but either way, the woman finally got out. She'll be home for Mother's Day. And of course, today, all across the state of Texas, every salon operation can open up. And we continue to have, across the nation, various folks trying to do whatever they can to make the American public suffer. They want you to suffer as long as you can. If you're out of a job, tough. You can't open your business because you run out of money during all this setback, tough. The job you had has been just crumbled. It's gone away, tough. And, of course, they continue to look for every way they can to slam the president. You know what they did in San Antonio? I hate to tell you, all of this is coming out of my native state of Texas. But the problem is in Texas, it's a red state, but many areas have gone blue. Austin, the state capital, El Paso, San Antonio showing it, and others, because everyone in New York and California getting out of those blue states because of the taxes and everything else and the attitude and socialism, so they go into Texas and they try to reinvent California, New York, and Texas. Bad idea, in my opinion. But anyway, the San Antonio Council unanimously passed a resolution addressing anti-Chinese COVID-19 references, saying you cannot refer to it as a Chinese virus. It encourages hate crimes and other incidents against Asian Americans and Asian immigrants. Now, the mayor said, who initiated it, we are seeing a rise of hate speech for the course of this pandemic. And others are saying we have businesses being targeted and threats made against them because they're a Chinese restaurant. Look, no, that should not happen. Should not happen. But they're trying to say you can't refer and use that term Chinese virus. It's hate speech. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas says, nuts. San Antonio City Council behaving like a lefty college faculty lounge triggered by Chick-fil-A and the words Wuhan virus. You want to investigate someone? Start with the New York Times and CNN, NNN, who both repeatedly and rightly referred to it as the Chinese coronavirus. Or as the president said for a long time, China, because it came from China, which it did. It wasn't reference to persons, ethnic group, is reference to location. Coming up in the next hour, we will be joined, as I said, by James Herson, and more of a breakdown on the DOJ decision to throw out the Flynn charges and the FBI and what it did. Coming up next hour.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.